This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. The Matrix, of course, is science fiction purporting to reveal the dark forces that enslave us. That is so 20th century. Now we have actual political kingmakers claiming the same thing. If Morpheus had floppy hair and wore three shirts, he would be Steve Bannon, the strategist and self-styled political philosopher who has seen the Matrix in what he calls the administrative state. He was Donald Trump's Iago, his Rasputin.
Send in Steve Bannon.
His Grim Reaper, Death in a Mask.
Hello, Donald. I have arrived.
But a new documentary takes a peek at the man behind the mask. Titled The Brink, the movie follows Bannon through his various battles after getting the heave-ho from the Trump White House. We join him at a low point as his candidate, Judge Roy Moore, is upset in the Alabama Senate special election. We see him grooming hard-right congressional candidates for the midterms. We see him coalition building among right-wing extremists in advance of the upcoming EU elections. Here, he's holding forth for journalists, here dining with fascists, and, oh yes, again and again, charming audiences coast to coast.
Oh my God! I'm so excited.
Bill Bennett.
Steve Bannon.
Oh,
I love him.
Are you really excited?
Oh, my God.
Allison Clayman is the director and co-producer of The Brink. Allison, welcome to OTM.
Thank you so much.
I want to ask you about the relationships that he's cultivated in the press. He notoriously was the key leaker of information to Michael Wolff for his tell-all bestseller, Fire and Fury. Through your movie, we see him engage with Bloomberg's Joshua Green, Andy Carney, who at the time worked for Politico.
Did we get the trailer?
Yeah.
Can I see the new trailer? Because I got to send this. Huh?
Yeah, hold, I'm looking at it right now.
Fine, just see it and then let me see it. And I got to get that to Maggie.
Maggie Haberman, White House reporter for the New York Times. After the Tree of Life synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh, where so many worshipers died, we see him texting Ken Vogel of the Times. From your perspective, are these relationships transactional? You know, are they a series of seductions? Is it a question of just keeping your enemies close? What do you make of that?
So I don't think he thinks that they're his enemy at all. I do think it feels very transactional, but I also think a lot of them do like him. He is like, yeah, I love journalists. You know, they're working hard. They're trying to do their job. They have information. They have networks. It's a great way for me to find information, too. And you can see blatantly he is planting or spinning stories the way he wants them to go out. And of course, the journalists, you know, take it in. And then if they're doing a good job, they're not just doing stenography. And others are tweeting every statement he's making. And, you know, like, it's almost like he's their beat.
There is this one scene fairly late in your film with Paul Lewis of The Guardian, in which Lewis savages Bannon to his face for dog-whistling anti-Semitic tropes.
Let me just say what Errol Morris said. He said, Steve Bannon will doubtlessly say that his remarks were not anti-Semitic, but I would respectfully disagree. He knew what he was doing. He's suggesting that you're doing dog-whistle anti-Semitism here. And that's your modus operandi.
I just disagree with Errol on that.
Is the term globalist an anti-Semitic?
Absolutely not.
Coded anti-Semitic?
No,
I mean, there are people
not.
Who would argue that it is. George Soros? I mean, that is widely accepted as an anti-Semitic trope. The suggestion that George Soros is somehow all-controlling, that he's influencing Europe, everybody knows.
I totally disagree with that. George Soros is the biggest...
It's not something to disagree with, because it is an anti-Semitic trope.
Well, what? No, George... That's... Just because you state it doesn't mean it's true.
The idea that George Soros is controlling the world is its massive...
I didn't say controlling the world. I said he's the financier and back of the NGO.
So you're unaware that many people will read that as being a nod and a wink toward anti-Semitism.
Absolutely not. I don't see that at all.
He was definitely like, I need to make sure I get it all in because, you know, Bannon's probably not going to want me back. But Paul filmed with him several times after that, actually, you know, much to his surprise. I think to me that's such a good reminder of this two-way street. And Bannon needs the press as well. You might be risking that he doesn't like you individually, personally. And look, Michael Wolff was still around after Fire and Fury came out, in which a lot of the consequences of his participation in that book, it seemed like they were pretty embarrassing for Bannon. That's what precipitated the sloppy Steve comments from Trump, who otherwise was not going for the jugular with Bannon in public.
So one could conclude that the guy is just so narcissistic, he wants attention no matter the cost to his dignity. But Bannon himself has another explanation. Here he is with his confederate, Rahim Kassam, when they were at a sit-down with a bunch of Eurofascists.
They're obsessed by us at the moment. We've got to use that obsession. Right? The Atlantic writes a 1,000-word article today about like 3 meetings Steve took over the last few days, right?
Trump taught me a great lesson. There's no bad media. The more the mainstream media gets obsessed with this, it's going to be your biggest ally.
When Bannon's talking in that clip, the larger context of that is he's having a dinner with members of various far-right parties from France, Sweden, Belgium, and they were actually asking him, what could we do to strengthen our position in the future? And one of the things they talk about is to be successful at the upcoming 2019 May EU parliamentary elections. And what about the media? You know, should we have Breitbart for Europe? Should we have some kind of right-wing media organization that we start up? And he was saying that actually the right-wing media, the model is becoming unsustainable. It's going to have to move entirely to a philanthropy model because the advertisers have been fleeing.
So it's through advertising still.
Through advertising. All the right-wing media, the top 10 companies, by the end of the year, except for Fox, will be donor-based. You'll have to have a donor come in and write a check.
And in large part, it has been because of citizen and consumer outcry, this movement that notifies advertisers that they're appearing on these sites, and then they get the companies to block their ads from getting placed on these specific sites. And it keeps happening more and more. But where you can get traction and you don't need to pay for it is the mainstream media. And when he's talking about that, I really do think he's talking about especially constantly dominating news cycles. And I think as they're talking about, you know, someone just writing an article about a few meetings Bannon held. Now, again, I think it's worth figuring out what's happening at these meetings. But is there enough context provided in the articles? And again, the danger of those far-ranging interviews.
Steve Bannon joins me now from Rome.
Anderson Cooper last week.
Mr. Bannon, it's a pleasure to have you on. I want to get to Obamacare a little bit later on, but let's just start with what the Attorney General Barr.
For a half hour, live from Rome, you know, being asked about his thoughts on the Mueller report in 2020.
I was talking to a Spanish journalist, and I think I said honey badger, which, as you know, is one of my favorite phrases.
I love honey badger.
I think the president's going to be
very aggressive. Honey badger don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Bannon was live from Rome in that interview, and the first question wasn't, so tell me about what you're doing in Rome. Like, it was just, you know, okay, we have Bannon here, let's ask him things. And I just don't think he's a figure that should be treated that way.
Now, I should say that your film ultimately is a most unflattering portrait of Steve Bannon on many levels. It catches him pronouncing cavalry as cavalry and zeitgeist as zeitgeist, which I find delicious.
It is.
It's a global revolt. It's a zeitgeist. We're on the right side of history.
It catches him losing his temper. It catches him using the same condescending and vaguely sexist dad joke over and over when posing with women at events.
Over here, get in the middle.
Oh, okay.
Rose between two thorns.
It catches Bannon breaking bread, as we discussed, with the worst of Europe's fascist firebrands. It catches him lying about the anti-Semitic bedrock of his supposed movement. And maybe most importantly, it shows his candidate, Roy Moore, getting defeated in Alabama's special senatorial election, followed by Bannon and his handpicked candidates getting their asses handed to them in the midterm elections, mm-hmm. which he described as a referendum on the Trump presidency. So net-net, you know, not the greatest PR piece for him. On the other hand, in his calculus, attention is currency. He says so in your movie.
We have to live off earned media, right? We don't have enough money. This revolution we're trying to lead, we're not Soros, right? We're not going to have $18 billion to put in something. We're not the Kochs.
We know he thinks that being in your film was a good bet. But I'm asking you, what does society gain from the brink? And what does it risk?
Of course there can be a risk. This is something that I thought about every night when I went to sleep. But one of my biggest inspirations to make this was my relationship to the Holocaust and Holocaust legacy. My grandparents are Holocaust survivors. And to me, it's a real question for now, as I think there are a lot of parallels in this time for, you know, how does a society get to a place where these things can happen? The fact that, you know, people are writing about it and talking about it as you are and raising questions that are bigger than him. And experts, you know, the world's leading expert in populism, people like Cass Mudd, who all say, yes, this is a film that is exposing not just the tactics, the strategy, but what's going on right now, what's about to happen. I do feel like this is an intervention and it's a contribution because it was made with all of these concerns and questions, you know, at the forefront.
The movie's called The Brink. The brink of what?
I mean, I think we all can feel that. We are at the brink of what? Going from Brexit to the election of Donald Trump to ongoing climate disaster. Also, the wealth gap and the way that the rich are getting richer and the poor are not advancing. All of this is a real recipe for evil forces to be able to succeed. You know, I didn't want to be anything that felt like it was referencing just him because I think the whole point of the film is a look behind the curtain at a whole system. And big part of this system is how he uses the media. It's the kinds of hateful messages and cruel policies that he's willing to put forward, but also that it's heavily funded. And that for all of his talk about being for the little guy and trying to shake things up, it's very clear that his position is among the super rich. And I think a figure like Bannon is only going to succeed as far as the whole system allows him to. And it's not just about the media attention. I think the media should be paying more attention to the money and holding it up against the rhetoric.
Allison, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Allison Clayman is co-producer and director of The Brink in theaters now. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Lowinger, Leia Fetter, John Hanrahan, and Asta Chaturvedi. We had more help from Zandra Ellen and Sharina Ong, and our show was edited this week by our executive producer, Katya Rogers. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson, and Jen, the speediest of recoveries to you. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.